Thank you. Well, good morning. Happy to be here. We have a lot of information to cover. We don't have enough time. And so what will happen throughout our conversation is I will be giving you loving off-ramps to go discover more on certain topics where maybe you say, yep, that's where I want to know more. It could be on a specific app or topic, whatever it might be. At Protect Young Eyes, which is a website that I'll refer to that we have spent countless hours building so that parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles can have one place to go to find all the best information about technology to guide all of our precious young people. That's where I'll be sending you to most often. Right, since the arrival of Jesus Christ, we've been asked to be in the world but not of the world, right? I don't think as much as now in human history has that been a challenge, where the world is in our hands. Not just the world, but the world literally. Those three letters that are in front of every website that we visit are often forgotten, but WWW is significant, World Wide Web. It's not the Granville Wide Web or the Kent County Wide Web. It is the World Wide Web. Every single time we are putting an internet-ready device in the hands of our young people, we are giving them access to the world. And even if our motivation was one of safety and protection, because for many of us that come from an analog mentality, right? I'm 44, I'm from Gen X. I have an analog perspective on things. Technology did not exist while I was growing up. And so I have to remind myself when I'm making decisions about my children today not to be deceived by an analog mindset in a digital world. But for me growing up, a phone meant safety and security. If I had access to a phone, that meant I could call mom or dad if something was wrong. Am I right? Right, and so I think many of us that parent today feel that a phone still represents that, and we forget about all of the other risks that come along with these devices that we're putting in the hands of our young people. So we'll get into a lot of things. So this is my wife, Andrea. We've been together a while. She's amazing. And the four children that we have been blessed with, you'll see, oops, up here on the screen, four that I have a much different family than I ever intended on having. So we have Lauren, who's 13. She's going into eighth grade. We have twins, Cole and Grant, who are the two up in front, fraternal twins. Grant was born with Down syndrome. Cole was not. I didn't even know that was possible until those were the two humans that God gave us. And we had no idea until after they were born. I mean, we knew Andrea was having twins. She was huge. But we did not know how different these two humans were going to be. And then 19 very short, sleepless, surprising months later, here came Blake. So yes, we had three boys under two. It was never on my bucket list, okay? But I'm not just teaching this and talking to principals and pastors and youth pastors about this. I'm living this, right? Very imperfectly, I might add, but I'm trying, and I'm pouring whatever I'm learning from my research into my own children and going, well, that didn't work as well as they said it would, so let's try this way. Friends, if there was one right way to protect all of our children from online danger, I'd write a book and retire. There isn't. There are so many variables and complexities and differences between your kids and my kids and how God made them uniquely compared to yours and mine. We have to parent our kids in the digital age individually. Right? There's no such thing as set it and forget it in the digital age. There are no quantity of parental controls that replace the need for intentional parenting in the digital age. Amen? Right? I think we want to find a switch and just switch it and then everything will be okay. It doesn't exist. We have to be intentional and do it daily, all right? So let's check your digital IQ. Number one, what is the legal age for kids to have their own social media account? Raise your hand if you know the answer to this question, and I'll call on you. Legal age to have their own social media accounts that would represent all those apps up on the screen there. Yes, sir, do you know?
18.
I wish it were, but it's not. 18 is not correct. Anybody else? Yes, it is 13. The Children's Online Privacy and Protection Act, COPPA, says that no company can knowingly collect personal information from anybody under the age of 13. Does this mean that 13 is the automatic right age for children to have social media? Yes or no? So there's a difference between the legal age and the right age, right? Does this mean that these companies go out of their way to put barriers in place to prevent young people from having social media of their own? Yes or no? No, they do not, all right? Let's talk about another one. Pick out all the apps on the screen that allow some form of pornography if I try hard enough. Now, friends, we're going to talk about some things that maybe don't always get talked about on a Sunday morning, because if we're going to appreciate the risks that are in the pockets of our young people, we have to talk about the risks. And I'm not afraid to go there, okay? I'm just not afraid. Of these apps that are up on the screen, the Bible app, Pinterest, Facebook, Delta Airlines, Pokemon Go, and Crossy Road, how many apps up there, if I try hard enough, can I get my hands on hardcore pornography? How many of you think it's all of them? Some of you are like, I sure hope not. The answer is actually five. The only app that I cannot get to porn on is Pokemon Go. You're like, man, I know the Old Testament is strange at times, but really, Chris? No. The problem with most of the apps that are on the iPhones, iPods, and iPads that your children have is that they were made for access. And if I try hard enough, I don't care what Disney princess is on the app, I can find a doorway to Google that you did not know about. And that's true about the Bible app. The Bible app has a doorway to Twitter because the Bible app wants you to tweet all of your daily inspiration, meaning that I can get to Google's Twitter page, meaning that I can get to a hidden Google search without ever having left the Bible app in Twitter and search for whatever I want. Even if you've set restrictions on that iPhone, it does not obey in the Bible app those restrictions on that iPhone. I just saw a bunch of mouths go, oh, right? The internet was made for access. It was made for the very thing that we want to stop, correct? Right? Let's not fall into this false trust that, well, Disney, Elsa's on this app, it must be okay. No, we'll talk about what that can mean, all right? Now that I've all just like ruined your mornings, you're like, I want to go home, right? Listen, we have to be real about this. I'm not just going to beat you up all morning. I am going to leave you with some practical solutions. I don't want you just to walk out of here disheartened. It is possible to raise children who know how to honor God with technology. But friends, it's not easy. It's not easy, okay? So I want you to be enlightened, equipped, and encouraged, but unfortunately, enlightenment can be a little bit painful at times. All right, so what is Protect Young Eyes? Protect Young Eyes is an organization that has a website. Oops, will it play for me? I want this to play for you. Maybe not. Let's see. Anyway, it's not moving, but what you would see normally is a screencast that would show you what our website is, protectyoungeyes.com, where you'll find all kinds of information about apps and devices, parental controls, what kids use them for, what you need to know. Because when I was a youth pastor, as I was in local church for 10 years before I went into working at a software company, what I heard from parents were two primary issues or obstacles when it came to protecting their kids from online danger. One, I don't know where to go, and I don't have time to find out. Anybody ever said those things in your head, right, when it comes to keeping up? And so we got rid of those obstacles, because before I was in youth ministry, I was a consultant for 12 years, so I love solving problems. That works in ministry. It doesn't always work in marriage so well, but anyway, that's a separate topic. So we built a website to overcome those two primary obstacles that parents and grandparents had when it came to protecting kids from online danger. That was, I don't know where to go, and I don't have time to find out. Guess what? We've done the research for you. No more excuses. Now, we don't live in the matrix. I can't USB it into everybody's brain. You do have to still go to my website, but we've done hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of hours of research with a team of folks who are doing this for you so that you can protect your precious young people, okay? We want people to use, and kids to use, technology. We are not a bubble wrap organization. We do not believe that bubble wrapping children from technology is preparing them for the world that they live in. Yes, let's keep them away from some of the horrible edges, but telling them that you can't use it at all until you're age 18 and then sending them off to college to try to figure it out on their own is not wise. We want them to learn how to use it so they can realize their dreams, whatever those may be, but too many kids underappreciate what their cliques today are doing to ruin their futures, okay? There's no such thing as passive parenting in the digital age. If you don't talk to them, then Dr. Google will. All right. Digital realities and digital strategies. In the note-taking guide that hopefully you were handed when you came in, we're going to go through some digital realities and strategies that, regardless of the age of the children that you are parenting or grandparenting, we believe that these realities exist for all of them. And then we'll present some practical strategies that I hope that you can go home and do something about today. Again, whether it's you and your own children, or whether it's grandkids coming over from time to time, there are things that my hope is that you'll walk out of here and say, I can do this in the next 24 hours. That is our sincere hope, all right? So reality number one, we have to start in a very obvious place, but that the enemy loves technology. Contrary to what the world would say, the internet is not neutral. The enemy is actively using the internet to attract the hearts, minds, desires of our young people all the time. It is not a neutral platform. Therefore, let's use that which we know, the sword of God's truth, which, right, the internet was not conceived when these words were written, and yet eternally still apply to how kids click today, Something as simple as the psalm, Psalm 119:37, to pray a barrier of protection digitally around our children, inserting a name, not because God's word is not adequate that we're trying to change it. I'm just saying the psalms as beautiful poetry about sometimes emotional events happening in the lives of the authors, expressing just heartfelt needs, personalize it for your own situation, right? Turn Chris's eyes away from worthless things. Preserve Chris's life according to your word. Insert the name of sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters to protect them from some of the dangers that are out there, okay? Because in 1 Peter 5:8, we are reminded that we have a very active enemy. Again, not passive in any way, telling us, right, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour constantly through our technology. All right, let's move on to reality number two. I told you we're going to have to move through these very quickly. I would love to have 4 hours with you, but that's not how we're going to spend this Sabbath, okay? Number two, technology is erasing childhood and adulthood. If you're filling in some blanks, that's what those underlined words mean. Technology is erasing both childhood and adulthood. In other words, kids are seeing and doing too much too young. There's this really strange phenomenon that comes along with technology. It's erasing their childhood in the information that they know. I find that way too many kids know way too much, way too young. But on the other hand, their behaviors are being delayed. Behaviors that used to be adult-like behaviors are being delayed because they can get everything they need through their device. Recent statistics show that the average age of getting your driver's license is not 16, that many juniors and seniors are now relying on mom and dad to drive to work. It's showing that in like past 20 years, we're at the lowest point of teenage pregnancy of any point in the past 20 years. And on one hand, you would say, this is phenomenal, right? This is great. But do you know why kids are not having sex anymore? It's because there's an imprint in their bed and they're Snapchatting all day long. They've traded certain relationships for others. And the downside of these behaviors, the emotional, the social, the depressive, the relational impacts of children not knowing how to interact with other human beings in a face-to-face way, we are far from knowing the impacts of that trade-off. Right? So I'm not saying that's bad. I love what some of those statistics are showing. I'm just saying we have traded one behavior for another, and we still don't know the bottom of what those trade-offs look like. Right? It's having this really strange impact on kids. I find that one of the primary violators of accelerating informational maturity in our children is YouTube. Right? Recent studies show that YouTube is the most used app by teens. You might think it's Instagram or Snapchat. No way. YouTube is number one by a distance. That there are 300 hours of content being uploaded to YouTube every minute of every single day. They cannot keep up with their content. And in its uncontrolled, unfiltered format, YouTube is not for kids. Now, some of you might ask, well, I've heard of YouTube Kids. Is that okay? It's better. Anything that says YouTube, I do not trust alone with my children. I swear nobody at Google has children. I can't believe that anybody that works at that company has families because so many of their decisions are anti-family. I just don't get it. That even YouTube Kids, I don't care if it says YouTube 4-year-old or YouTube 2-year-old. Whatever YouTube says it is, it's always verify before I trust. Okay? Just keep that in mind. So if that's the reality, what is the strategy that we come up against that reality of technology accelerating and giving kids way too much information? Means that we have to parent and grandparent our kids individually and only put them in digital environments that they are individually ready for. What I have up on the screen, there are 5 different filters that we can use in order to assess the internet readiness of our children and grandchildren. Number one, look at their friend history. Meaning however your little humans that you know and love navigate their friendships in real life, look at them, study them. Are they always full of drama? Are they always changing friendships? Do they struggle relationally face-to-face? However they struggle face-to-face, pour gasoline on it, and that's how they'll navigate friendships in social media. The face-to-face is an indicator of the screen-to-screen times 10. Because when you depersonalize relationships, you accelerate the depravity of how I'll interact with other human beings. You've seen it in your friends, and you've seen it in kids, right? That we type differently than we talk. Amen? Yes, I'm not the only one that has struggled with this at times to say, oh, I wish I wouldn't have hit send on that, right? Number two, the obedience history. I know all kids disobey at some level, unless it's just mine. Am I right? Okay. But there's a certain type of child that while you're still in the room, they've already disobeyed you from the rule that you just told them. You're like, what? I got to come up with a new one already? I mean, what's going on here? Right? Again, individualization when we look at how we parent our children. That's how God loves us, right? We're ministered through his spirit individually. We need to parent in the digital age individually. Look at their curiosity level, right? YouTube is what I would call death by paper cut. If you're a curious kid, you will get to some place 20 videos in that you never intended to get to. Because YouTube's suggested next video may not be in line with the next video you would have them watch. Let's make no mistake, the internet is built on math. How dare we substitute the morality of our children for a mathematical equation when it comes to Google searches and what they're looking for on Google? It's an algorithm that's mathematically trying to figure out what they want to watch next. That is no replacement for the morality we want them to have, am I right? Again, verify before we trust. Number four, look at their heart condition. It's not the way in which their heart is pumping blood through their body. I'm talking about their self-confidence, their self-esteem. Are they a strong-minded individual? Do they know who they are in Jesus Christ? A question that I'm often asked by parents is this one. What's the right age to give my kids social media? Whenever a parent asks me this question, I look at them and I say, you know what? That's a great question, but it's the wrong one. There is no one right age. This is a blog post that I'll say is one of your homework assignments that you're going to read sometime in the next 24 hours. If you have any young people in your world that dabble or have friends that dabble in social media, because don't forget, whatever their friends are doing does get to your kids, especially in the digital world, okay? But when it comes to this question, if you were to say, okay, Chris, then how do you determine whether or not a child is ready for social media? This is what I would say, and these are things that I outline in this blog post. I would walk up to your son or daughter, I would stick up my hand, and I would say, hi, I'm Mr. McKenna, nice to meet you. Who are you? If your son or daughter does not know how to navigate that exchange, to shake my hand, to look me in the eye, and at least say hi, they're not ready for the face-to-face, then they are not ready for the screen-to-screen. This is why I force all of my children, all the way down to my kindergartner, to order all of their own food at restaurants. We always get the name of the waiter or the waitress, as we did at Pepino's just a couple of days ago. Hi, Hannah. Miss Hannah, this is my son, Blake. He's six. Nice to meet you. Blake, say hi. Hi. Blake, can you tell Miss Hannah what you would like to eat? You've been reading for 3 years. You don't need my help. I want them to all know how to navigate human-to-human interaction. If your child doesn't know how to do that, then they're not ready for social media. The next thing that I would say to you as a parent is I would say, can you trust your son or daughter home alone for 2 straight hours without any communication, including a text message? If the answer to that question is no, then they're not ready for 2 minutes alone on social media. I mean, heck, you used to leave in the morning and not come home till the sun came down, right? Why can you not trust your, if you can't trust them at home for 2 hours, then they're not ready for it, right? The other thing I might do is I might walk up to your son or daughter and say, hi, remember I just introduced myself? Yes, nice to see you again. Tell me 3 amazing things about who you are. What do you enjoy? How are you made? What is your identity? If your son or daughter can't answer that question of, you know what, I'm a great runner, and I really love my family, and I like to dance or sing. Like, tell me some things about who you are, both spiritually and physically. If they can't say those things, if they're not strong enough in identifying things that are who they are, then they will fall victim to all of the false identities and twisted and distorted views that social media is going to want to pin on an insecure child, right? The fourth question I might get to is, how old are you? And if the answer to that question is 15 and I'm not satisfied with the previous 3 answers, then I'm going to look at that young lady or young man and say, I am sorry, hon, but you are just not ready for social media. We have to buck up against the lie that our kids need social media in order to be socially adequate human beings in the world today. It is not necessary. Can it be used well? Yes. But I just do not think that the hearts and minds of too many 13-year-old girls are ready for the whispers of Instagram. They're just not. I just do not think that the underdeveloped prefrontal cortex of a 12-year-old boy is ready for the ephemeral messages of Snapchat. They're just not ready. They don't have the wisdom of this world or neurologically, right, to navigate these apps well. I am passionate about how kids use social media. This is a topic I could spend all day on, but I can't. But this is a blog post that I want you to spend a lot of time reading because we've bought a lot of lies when it comes to what kids need in order to survive in middle and high school when it comes to social media, and it's just not true. I encourage parents and grandparents, whoever might be the one in charge of it, to employ the 7-day rule for every app that children want to use. You use it for 7 straight days before you give it to them. I don't care if Shrek or what Disney princess is on the front of it. You use it for 7 straight days. You tell me what pop-up ads show up on day 3 that didn't show up on day 1. Did you know that in January of this year, the Google Play Store, which is what distributes all apps for Android tablets and devices, had to remove 63 apps from the Google Play Store that were marketed, games marketed towards children that had pornographic pop-up ads in them? Had parents been using these games and not just giving kids the access to download it, they would have seen this. Use it before they do. And then ask yourself at the end of 7 days, am I comfortable with everything I just read and saw in the hands of my 6-year-old? That's the 7-day rule, okay? In Proverbs 4:23, we read, keep your heart, keep her heart, keep your son's heart with all vigilance, for from it, right, comes the spring of life. Okay, reality number 3, we're just getting started, is porn is the norm. Sadly, it's true. Pornography is the norm when it comes to the internet, always just 3 clicks away. No child should have access to the unfiltered internet, ever. When I'm not working at Protect Young Eyes, I am a marketing manager for Covenant Eyes. How many of you are familiar with Covenant Eyes? Right? Often used in Christian circles as a filtering and accountability software. I am in charge of our content, which also means that I'm in charge of our blog. And every week I am clearing hundreds of blog comments from people who are desperate and are hurting. There is, from what I've seen, no bottom when it comes to sexual depravity. The things that I have read are unbelievable at times. This is what is available online today to our children, and it is sucking the life relationally out of the hearts and minds of our young people who have open access to this stuff. When you look at the behaviors of America today, this was just one snapshot taken of the top 10 websites visited by people in the United States, right? 3 of the top 10 websites are pornographic. And some of you in your minds, because you have an analog mindset, again, I could spend 4 hours just on the topic of pornography. Some of us don't even like to say the word, let alone spend 4 hours on it, but I could. When some of you think about the word pornography, you think of a magazine that you looked at with your friends. Let me tell you the difference between the pornography that you grew up with and the high-definition 4G streaming click after click after click pornography that is available today is not even in the same universe. To compare the two is just not possible. Right? So that's where we have to change an analog mindset to a digital reality. The porn that kids have access to today is nothing like what you saw as a kid. There were barriers that existed to get to the porn that we're talking about today when you were a kid. You would have to go to a certain part of town or visit a certain store or do certain things physically in order to have access to the type of porn that is available in 5 clicks today. Those barriers just don't exist anymore. And it's doing all kinds of things to the hearts and minds of our young people with disordered expectations, objectification of women. This is what lies behind the entire Me Too movement, is a generation of men addicted to porn who learn that women are things to be used instead of human beings to be loved and adored. Therefore, I will abuse you to get what I want. That's what sits behind that entire movement, right? What we see today is a peer-on-peer sexual abuse epidemic where young people are abusing other young people sexually. And it's not because these are bad kids. Friends, listen to me. I've sat down and had conversations with individuals who work in recovery at the Children's Assessment Center here in town. These are not bad kids. The problem with the pornography today that kids have access to is that children neurologically are different than us as adults. Children copy what we do. Have you noticed this? Both the good and the bad, right? Kids are born with an abundance of what are called mirror neurons. Mirror neurons cause me to do physically the things that I see visually. They're little copycats, right? Therefore, if a kid views pornography, they are compelled neurologically to try what they saw. I've been told this story numerous times by young people who were abused at sleepovers by a child who had porn on a device and then tried it on their son or daughter. A good kid who was compelled to do a bad thing because of what he or she had access to. So we must do everything in our power to prevent young people from having access to this stuff. We were the organization that broke the story on what Snapchat tried to roll out back in May, the X-rated section that Cosmo was trying to put into Snapchat, right? Sneak it in there. We broke the story, and then Cosmo 4 days later said, we relent, parents are ticked off, and they were, rightfully so. Right, but these are the environments. Have you ever spent any time, for those of you who are familiar with Snapchat, have you ever spent any time in the Discover section of Snapchat? Please do. Please poke around in apps like Instagram, where in only 6 seconds, and the video isn't going to show because we just proved that it wouldn't, but I just released a blog post this morning that I'm hoping gets Instagram's attention. It is called Instagram Porn is Worse Than You Think. It's time for change. And I lay out in a very detailed, comprehensive way the ease through which children are accessing pornography through Instagram, calling Instagram to listen and to finally give us some parental controls to do something about it, challenging them with their sons and daughters to say, would you put this in their hands? Because this is what you're asking us to do. So I say that to have your help, because I need you to share this article, to get their attention. We need to use the viral nature of the internet for good instead of what it's often used for, right? The strategy to come up against this reality of pornography is to say the right things. Conversation, conversation, conversation. If you're filling in your notes there, right, this is where it's different than how you were raised. If you were like me, and I love, my parents are wonderful, but when it came to the talk, it happened one time, and I was more confused afterwards than when it started. Amen? Anybody relate to me on that? Okay, right? If it happened at all, there's no such thing as one talk in the digital age, only consistent and persistent conversations, right? Because if you don't say it, Dr. Google will. You have to be the trusted voice, not an algorithm, right? So that means we have to say a lot of things that we weren't told, right? Talk to your kids. So some of the things about conversation: talk early, talk often, maybe have a digital code of conduct. Talk about device ownership. What I mean by device ownership is I don't care who bought it. I don't care who got it for their birthday. Every internet-ready device in my house on the Wi-Fi that I pay for is co-owned by this guy. And all of you have permission to co-own every single internet-ready device that enters your house. Are you a grandma or a grandpa? From this point forward, every internet-ready device that enters your house is co-owned by you. And I invite you to sit your grandson or granddaughter down and look them in the eye and say, listen, I love you, but I do not trust what happens online. Every single click that happens on my Wi-Fi in grandma's house is my responsibility. I don't understand everything that you're doing on this device, but understand that if you click somewhere that you couldn't show me, I'm responsible for that. And let me tell you, if my grandma ever sat me down, slid a plate of cookies and milk in front of me and said, listen, and had that talk with me, my behavior would have changed. Because a lot of kids listen to grandma. Okay? I use that as an illustration of some of the things that I think really could happen. Because this blog post is one that typically gets a lot of attention. It's pointed out in your notes there, right? How to talk to your 5-year-old about porn. You're like, what? Okay? In typical conversations that I have with parents, and I do this talk hundreds of times in front of thousands of parents, I usually make them repeat the word pornography after me. It feels a little different in a sanctuary to make you do that, so I'm not going to do that here. But friends, we have to be comfortable saying the word. It's just a word. The reason why kids feel shame and weirdness about it is because you do. Don't add to it. talk about it. When my son Blake was 5, he was sitting at the island in our kitchen playing on the computer. And I said, hey, Blake, listen, you like technology, right? He's like, yeah. I'm like, Blake, listen, you know what your private parts are, right? He's like, yeah. I mean, he's a 5-year-old boy. He plays with them all the time. I mean, seriously, 5-year-old boys know these things, okay? We've been having this conversation for a really long time. He's like, yes, Dad, I know what my private parts are. Good. Listen, Blake, if you're ever using the computer and you ever see someone else's private parts, do you know what I want you to do? He's like, what? Like, now he's listening. Like, what? I said, I want you to put it down and tell someone. That's it. Can you do that for me? Repeat after me. Put it down, tell someone, tell someone. And as often as I remembered, I would quiz him. If he was sitting in here today, I would say to him, Blake, if you ever see, now he knows the word. I would say, Blake, if you ever see pornography on the computer, what would you do? He'd say, Dad, I put it down, I tell someone. He knows. At age 5, I didn't think he was ready for the word yet, but I taught him without saying the word what to do when he sees porn. Am I right? Then when he turned 6 and he started riding the school bus, because parents will often ask me, okay, what's the right age to talk to my kid about porn? I'll say, listen, if you wait until you're ready, it's too late. The other thing I'll say is, your kid is ready before you are, so just get it done. And then the third thing I'll say is, does your kid ride a school bus? Because if the answer to that question is yes, then they need to know the word. I don't care if they're in kindergarten. Would you rather hear it from you or the 8th grader that's sitting in the 2nd row, right? So as soon as he turned 6, I said, Blake, listen, remember when we talked about seeing people's private parts on the computer? There's a word for that. The world calls that pornography. It's just a word. If you ever heard a kid using that word or talking about that on the bus, what would you do? He'd say, well, Dad, I'd tell you. I'm like, that's right, brother. You would tell me. It's not weird. I'm not ashamed. I'm not going to treat you any differently. I will be proud of you and give you a high five if you tell me. Because I do not want the enemy. And one of the enemy's primary controls over our kids when it comes to the internet is curiosity. I want to erase Google's curiosity power over my children. Google search box loves a kid whose parents are quiet on critical issues. Google will give that kid all kinds of answers. I want my kids to come to me first because they know no matter how weird it might seem, I'm okay. We're going to talk about a lot of other things in the 20 minutes that we have left, but that is one thing that I need you to walk out of here with. Open up the conversation to all of the weird and awkward things that nobody talked to you about. Because if you don't, some other kid or some search engine will. Okay? All right. There's some resources in the back of your note-taking guide that I hope will be helpful. You can find them at protectyoungeyes.com/resources. We do a lot of research, again, so that you don't have to spend the time doing it. You'll see those on the back. All right. The next reality here, number 4, is that technology is rewiring their brains and hearts. I'll go over this as quickly as I can. Just know that there's a reason why teenagers at 7 o'clock are fine, and at 7:02 the world is falling apart. That's because neurologically, the adolescent brain is going through a massive rewiring process. That it's creating billions of additional neurological connections, and then through a process of use it or lose it, determines what neural pathways are used most frequently, but then winnows away or removes those neural pathways that are not used so that based on what you feed your precious brain, especially during adolescence, it becomes a more efficient organ for thinking as an adult. It is amazing the way that God has created us, but you can see how this can be hijacked for bad. That if I'm constantly feeding my brain things that are admirable and good and worthy of praise and excellent, then I'm going to have a brain that is bent more often than not toward those things. On the other hand, if I am constantly feeding my brain things that are depraved and dark and hateful and cruel and mean, then over time I'm going to have a brain that is bent that way. Right? The neurology of how we use technology is so important. So I do entire presentations about gaming in the brain and social media in the brain just to cover a couple of quick topics. Number 1, just a question. Do violent video games cause violent behavior? Raise your hand if you think the answer to this question is yes. Raise your hand if you think the answer to the question is no. It's okay, we won't judge you. Raise your hand if you're not sure but you really want it to be yes. Honestly, scientifically, friends, it's difficult to say because it's unethical to test it. I can't put 30 teenagers in a room and let them play first-person shooter games for a week and then give them baseball bats and see what happens. It would be entertaining, but unethical. But we can show, even absent causation, we can show some very strong correlations between what overexposure to violence does to the behaviors of children. Even the American Psychological Association, stated, and they are a secular organization that does nothing unless they have a lot of science in their back pocket. But they made some pretty jarring statements. They demonstrated a link between violent video game use and both increases in aggressive behavior and decreases in pro-social behavior, empathy, and moral engagement. Okay, what that means is that playing violent video games does not cause all kids to bring guns and knives to school, but it causes them to care less about their fellow human beings. If I, for 10 hours a day, see people as objects that are achievements, meaning that the game rewards me for eliminating them, means that through that reward, my brain releases dopamine, which reinforces a reward pathway in my brain, and I start to value the elimination of life digitally, don't you think that over time it's going to cause me to care a little bit less when you're having a bad day? I mean, simply, it seems obvious, but we have to say it to go, yes. Now, if you want to have a separate conversation about Fortnite, I will. I'll do that afterwards because that could hijack the whole rest of the morning, right? Is it violence? Is it not? Is it good or is it bad? At the end of the day, I just don't think a lot of middle schoolers are ready for the addictive nature of Fortnite. It's not blood and guts, but it is tuned to make them addicts of that game, okay? Just because marijuana doesn't turn the kid into a violent person, we don't give it to them, okay? Right? So these are some of the realities I think we need to talk about when it comes to the environments we're putting our kids in. So we spend a lot of time as an organization analyzing screen time, reading a lot of books about it. If that's of interest to you, this is a blog post that you can spend some time on at protectingeyes.com/blog, screen time and kids, 5 recommendations for parents and educators. Because I got to tell you, a lot of schools are not getting this right. What do you do as a family when you're required to use certain apps to get homework? This is a real tension right now with schools. Anybody felt this? Am I the only one? How much screen time does your kid come home having already consumed at school in a quote-unquote educational manner? This is a difficult equation, isn't it? And there's a lot of conversations that are still yet to happen when it comes to technology in education, right? Social media, again, wow, a lot of questions that social media causes us to ask, right? If social media keeps us connected to more people than ever before, then why are we so anxious? It's because of features that exist in apps like Snapchat that are tuned to create anxiety so that kids keep using them. Snapchat, like other social media platforms in Silicon Valley, have a whole neurological playbook on how the teenage brain works. They know this. They know that with the snap streak, that kids will start to believe they have to keep their snap streak, and because they've attached worth to that, when I'm at risk of breaking the streak, my brain neurologically releases a neural hormone called cortisol. Cortisol causes me to feel like, oh my gosh, heart rate goes up, blood pressure goes up. It causes me to find a place of safety so that I can remove the cortisol from my brain. Where is the safest place to be if I'm a kid who's worried about like breaking my snap streak? Snapchat, it's brilliant and yet sinister all at the same time. They know this, okay? If social media keeps us connected to more people than ever before, then why are we so lonely? Why, in all of our abundance, are we the most depressed, medicated country on earth? Why is that? It's because the wide and narrow list of friends that social media tells me are important cannot substitute the narrow and deep relationships that we were all meant to have as human beings, right? Big questions to ask. Dunbar's number, he was a scientist who studied the impact of social media on our relationships. Without going into a lot of detail, he came to the conclusion that most people can only maintain, and this was done secularly by studying primates and other species on Earth, we can only maintain about 150 relationships well. And within that 150, we can only really do life with 5 deeply, where we have what he called the shared life experience, right? So the number of friends doesn't matter, it's the quality of them. And so we have apps like Instagram that do this to young brains, particularly young brains of females, trying to get the perfect picture, having a preconceived idea of how many likes. And when not enough likes are achieved, then I don't believe I'm pretty enough. It starts to change my worth as a human being. And then the next time I take more pictures and more pictures and more pictures, right, is a downward spiral until I've labeled myself as depressed, okay? Facebook does much of the same thing. Now, this is a video that isn't going to show, basically saying Sean Parker, who was one of the founding members of Facebook, sitting down in an interview recently, admitting that he and Mark Zuckerberg and Kevin Systrom, the current CEO of Instagram, they sat around and looked at each other and said, how can we build something that causes people to use it as much as possible? They knew they were creating something that took advantage of a psychological weakness in all of us that sought worth from other people. And the quote that he makes at the very end, which is so jarring, he said, we knew this and we did it anyway. Right? You've all fallen victim to it. The spring break picture with your feet by the pool, you love getting 50 likes. Ladies, am I right? It feels good. That's because every time we get that validation, it's a social validation feedback loop that feeds our brains, releases dopamine, and makes us feel great. Right? They knew this when they created all of these things. All right, I want to make sure I hit the right stuff here. All right, so the strategy then around that is to put it off as long as possible. I think I've made that point abundantly clear, that they don't need it. We love organizations like Wait Until 8th, which is here. It's a group of very motivated moms down in Texas that we partner with. They've said kids don't need a smartphone until at least 8th grade, and we totally agree. We think that you can keep in touch with your kids. There are devices like the Gizmo Gadget, which are talk, text, and GPS. It's just that kids who are not in high school do not need the baggage of portable internet. They just don't need it. Yes, find out where they are. Yes, text them and talk to them on the phone, but they don't need the internet. Amen? Okay, good. Just want to make sure I'm with my people here, right? That you guys agree with me. They don't need to carry it with them, okay? Our website has a whole bunch of resources that point to non-internet-ready devices, if that's of interest to you. In Philippians 4:8, we read, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. The Apostle Paul knew how important our thoughts were. Thoughts dictate behaviors. Therefore, preventing our kids from being in places that are impacting them neurologically is a very wise thing to do. All right, reality number 5 is where the kids are is where the predators are, sadly. Wherever the kids are is where the predators are. And so if I put apps like this up on the screen, if any of you have young people in your house, they would know what these are. These are all apps that are known as those that by their features encourage predatory behavior. Unfortunately, some of them, like Roblox, Musical.ly doesn't exist anymore as of this week. It was turned into a Chinese-owned app called TikTok, which now has 400 million users. Roblox is a Minecraft-like game that a lot of middle and elementary school, particularly boys, but a lot of girls too, like to use, that has an unmoderated chat feature in it, which is often used for grooming. Right? So it may seem fun that it's a game, but this is where not knowing all of the features of the game can get parents into trouble. Now, we've profiled all of those. If you want to read out more about them, you can. We educate a lot of young people that we speak to at elementary, middle, and high schools all over the country about what we call tricky people when it comes to elementary and middle school kids. See, here's the problem. Again, analog thinking. When I was a young person and I was going out to play with my friends, this was the conversation. My mom would say, hey, if you're going down to the park with Brian or Christy, right, and you see a guy with a hoodie in front of a van with no windows and he's holding a puppy and candy, just don't talk to him, okay? Thanks, Mom. That was the conversation about strangers, because we used to identify strangers by what they looked like, am I right? That doesn't work anymore in the digital age. Everybody looks like me. Everybody's profile picture kind of looks like mine and is normal, right? We have to help people, kids, identify strangers, not by what they look like, by what they talk like. Tricky people ask certain questions. So we have to give our kids these tools. Now, we've written a blog post, as you can imagine, all about that. This one right here, Tricky People, Stranger Danger in the Digital Age. And in this blog post, we make this statement that a lot of parents typically agree with. We have to give our nice kids permission not to answer nice questions from people they don't know online. See, there's a problem with the be nice movement. I love it, but it's missing the rest of the sentence. It's be nice, but be wise. I just spoke to a dad this week on Tuesday from Rockford who is in the process of pursuing criminal charges against a sex offender who who lives in Granville, coincidentally, and through these apps has been contacting his son through Snapchat for the last 6 months, okay? This is what his son said to him. Dad, he was really nice, and I didn't know what to say to make him stop. Nice kids, when confronted with a nice person and a nice question, think it's mean not to respond. We have to give our nice kids permission not to answer nice questions from people they don't know online. Okay? That's a really, really big deal. All right. Some of the things that we have to cover quite quickly here are the strategies around what we do to prevent predatory and other dangerous activity. At Protect Young Eyes, we talk about guarding digital doorways at three different levels, at the location level, the router level, and the device level. I was speaking to a woman before this and talking about locations. We believe that there are four primary locations, we've added a fifth now, where kids shouldn't be online because they create the greatest amount of risk. You want to know what they are? Well, school buses, for one. Oops, I went right past it here. School buses is number one. Bedrooms is number two. Sleepovers is number three. The bathroom is number four, be it at home or school. And grandma's and grandpa's house is number five. Because you have Wi-Fi, and you don't know as much as they do, and they know that. Like I said, sit them down with a plate of cookies and milk and look them in the eye and tell them what you expect. Okay, mitigate that risk. Okay? When I talk about guarding the location, do you know the internet rules of every home where your children are spending time in the summer? This is a really big deal, right? When I was a kid, my parents just needed to know the answer to one question. Do you have Showtime, Cinemax, or HBO? That was sort of it. That was the extent of my trouble. Today it's different. It's, do you have iPads in your house? Do you have filtering on those? Are there older siblings who have different access to the young people, right? These are all questions. I know they're not easy, but there are questions that we have to ask in the digital age, okay? We also encourage people to guard the router. This is a slightly more technical issue. If you don't know what that means, you can read about it on our website. I guarantee that somebody in the Highland Hills community here has the technical aptitude to help families here that want to get some controls on their router. Remember, you are responsible for every digital click that happens on the Wi-Fi in your home. Do you have controls on your router that will prevent people from getting to really horrible things if they're on your Wi-Fi? Relatives, babysitters, others who are in your house. If the answer to that question is no, then that's a risk, and that's a big problem. So if that's something you need help with, I'm sure that either through, hey, if you can't find anybody, go to a middle schooler. They can help you, okay? Go to the youth pastor. Go to somebody and say, hey, I need a young person to help me set up my router. I'm sure they can help you do it. And then finally, guard the device. In the back of your notes there, and also at protectyoungeyes.com/resources, we have a number of solutions, parental control solutions that we suggest, that we love, and that we trust. Again, there are hundreds of them that are out there. If you're using one that's not on our list, but it works for you, go for it. Keep going. We've just taken the list and have narrowed it down to a real short list so that you don't have to do a lot of research. But if you've got a different one that you know and love, keep using it. Just do something, okay? I'm going to skip over this one and head into reality number seven. So skip reality number six. For this crowd, I think you're good with it. Reality number seven is important for parents and any caring adult to know that kids are constantly watching you, including this really creepy one up on the screen right now. Every time I see this slide, I'm like, boy, I've got to get a different kid up on the screen. This idea that we are modeling digital behaviors all the time. Look back at the last 168 hours of your life, a week, and would you want your kids modeling every digital click that you made, including the amount of time that you spent on your device, including when you picked it up, maybe answering that text message while driving, whatever it was. They are watching us constantly, so we have to model the right behaviors. This means, as a mom or a dad, don't be constantly checking your feed or checking email or jumping when the phone rings. This means that every single time that you're dropping your kids off at school, if you do not want your son or daughter to become a child who uses their phone while driving, then don't be on the phone. I understand sometimes, as a parent, that they're strapped in, and that's the only time they're not strapped to you, so you have a moment to speak to a friend. I get it. I've been there. But just understand that if every time you're in the car with them, you're on the phone, they're watching you. And they see this, okay? In other words, don't be this family here. Reality number 8 is technology is constantly changing. We're going to end here real quickly, okay? Constantly changing, which is why you're here. Again, this is just the tip of the iceberg on a lot of things, but we had, Pastor Wells and I talked about kind of doing this 50,000-foot flyover just to kind of give you a taste of things that you can go to the website and find out more because it is constantly changing. So you have to stay informed. And a very easy way to do that, because a wall of apps like this changes all of the time, is that we have a bi-weekly newsletter. And please ignore, this is the wrong slide. I was just at the GEMS Global, so for the Christian Reformed Church, the GEMS Global Leadership Conference that they did up near Toronto in Canada a couple of weeks ago, and I realized this morning I kept their slide in here for you guys, okay? You're like, oh, that's cute. It's not. It's embarrassing. What I need you to do is you can text the word PROTECT, P-R-O, it's in your notes there, right? PROTECT, P-R-O-T-E-C-T, to 66866, and that will automatically enroll you into our bi-weekly caring adult parent, grandparent, educator newsletter. Well, we'll feed you. You can come to the website as often as you want. That's great. But if you want to get it in email, then you can subscribe to it that way, okay? If you're somebody that's on Facebook, you can also go to our Facebook page and like our page. And there's a dual benefit to that. Benefit number one is that you start to receive our almost daily updates in Facebook, in your Facebook feed. Benefit number two is that when I see 25 families from Highland Hills Baptist Church have liked my Facebook page, I'll get a hit of dopamine and it'll make me feel great, okay? This is a win-win for both of us. I'll be like, yes, they love me. False validation. Stop it. Okay. All right. And then reality number 9, you can't win this battle alone, right? We are a faith community that understands that in certain ways. Right? And this is why it's so important that you're here, but that you extend this conversation to those who are not. Because listen, how we start to win in the digital age is when we all start to say and do the same things. I mean, how frustrating is it to be on all different pages among friend groups with your kids? Am I right? Let's have a shared vocabulary, a shared understanding of the things that we think are important when it comes to technology and talk to other parents, okay, and get help if necessary, all right? This is so, so important. Let me skip here to, again, the ending. We want kids to be kids and to use technology well to realize all their dreams, wherever that may be, but it takes us doing it with them to get this right. We can't let them figure it out on their own. All right, 30 more seconds. Do you feel like this guy right now? Hey, great talk, but seriously, tell me exactly what I need to do right now or I might cry. Okay, every good sermon ends with a couple of key takeaways. Here they go. This is 5 things you need to do in the next 24 hours. As many of them as possible. Number 1, get YouTube under control in your house. This blog post will tell you how, and let me tell you, it's not easy. The way to control YouTube in the app is different than how you control it through Safari, which is different than how you control it on your Android device through Chrome. It's all different, which is why we spend so much time outlining all of those differences in this blog post here. Get YouTube under control. Number 2, read this blog post. What's the right age to give my kid social media? I talked about that one earlier, no surprise. Number 3, have one new conversation. Some of you have written down a whole slew of things that you're going to strap your kid down with duct tape at home and just vomit all this stuff all over them and hope they get it. Let me tell you, don't do that. Don't do that. My invitation to you is to drip and not to waterfall all this stuff all over your kids. Pick one kid, one talk, one time. That's it. Maybe car time, meal time, or bedtime. One kid, one talk, one time. Practice it, pray about it, then do it. And then pick another kid, and try it a second time. But I find that family culture changes through drips and not through waterfall, okay? What a waterfall does is just creates rebellion and resistance. Do it little bits at a time, natural, God-guided ways, okay? Number 4, enable Apple's restrictions. 80% of families have young people who use Apple devices. Enable Apple's restrictions and understand that this fall, all of Apple's restrictions are going to change. So look for a blog post from us about that. I'm running their beta of iOS 12 on my phone right now. It's fabulous. Be on the lookout for that. It's actually going to give us a lot more control to turn off apps on their devices from mine. It's wonderful, okay? So that's coming. And then number five, find a parental control resource that works. Some of them are in the notes there. Okay. That is the fastest I've ever given that presentation. I got to be honest. But I don't often do this on a Sunday, so I wanted to make sure that you got as much helpful information as possible. You have all of my contact information on the top right-hand corner of your sheet there, be it my email, my cell phone. We are a team of, after I get them on board next week, we'll be a team of seven total individuals that in the past 12 months, we have done about 250 presentations around the country. We have a lot of churches and schools who are hungry for this, so spread the word. We would love to speak to others. But please, if nothing else, just share the information so that we can bless as many families as possible and guide as many families and young people as possible into using technology well. If you have a specific personal question, do not hesitate to reach out to me. Although our reach is national, I live in Caledonia, and I want to be a local resource to families here in Kent County first, so please do let me know. Pastor Wells, that is what I have.